Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Lemon Grove has a new council member. We'll tell you who she is and all about her on our show today. Bishop Jamo, longtime leader of the Chaldean Church, has passed away, and we'll have a look back at his remarkable life on today's show. The El Cajon City Council will be reconsidering a controversial immigration measure pushed forward by Mayor Bill Wells on the agenda on Tuesday, February 11th. On Crime Beat, hear how a viral video on social media helped lead to the arrest of a man who became violent in a Santee hair salon, and about a lockdown at a middle school in Rancho San Diego that prompted a restraining order against a man with a weapon outside of the school. Then on Destination East County, hear about all kinds of fun and fabulous events coming up across East County during the month of February. On the second half of our show today, we'll have some headline news nationally from 2025 Talks and Public News Service, including a controversial appointment by President Donald Trump to head up a faith-based commission. Trump's firing of the Federal Elections Commission chairman, Vice President Vance questioning the power of the judiciary, and efforts to improve infrastructure in rural America. Then we'll have a special report on efforts by Donald Trump to eliminate the Department of Education, as well as what some California leaders and educators have to say about that. From California News Service, hear about a disparity in car loans for military members. In Julian, a proposed placement of sexually violent predator Gary Snavely has been blocked, and we'll tell you why on our show today. Then we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County segments, Master Gardener Connie Beck telling you how to attract butterflies and bees to your garden this spring. From California News Service, we'll have a report on California's K-12 schools lagging behind pre-pandemic levels. And finally, hear about expanded trolley service to East County from the Metropolitan Transit Service. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Lemon Grove has a new city council member. The city council on February 4th appointed businesswoman Yadira Altamirano to fill the seat left vacant after Allison Snow was elected mayor. This will be Altamirano's second time serving on the council since she was previously appointed to finish out city council member Matt Mendoza's term from late 2019 through December 2020 after he resigned. In her testimony to the council, Altamirano recalled her arrival in Lemon Grove as a young child who did not speak English but felt safe walking to and from school, playing in neighborhood parks, and navigating city streets. She later returned to raise her own children in the city. Answering questions posed by the mayor and city council members, Altamirano said her top focus points will be improved safety, infrastructure projects, and city repairs. "Our youth are our future," she said. Her application indicates her goals include reopening the city's rec center. She emphasizes her desire to clean up the city and restore the Lemon Grove she remembers from her youth, creating community pride. She wants more events to bring the community together, such as farmers markets and bringing back the city's old times parade. Altamirano landed this second appointment to the City Council over 11 other applicants. After interviewing all the candidates, council members held a straw poll in which they could vote on up to 3 candidates, with Altamirano getting the most votes. A motion was then made and seconded to appoint Altamirano to the Lemon Grove City Council, which was unanimously approved. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are here listening to the Chaldean Corner, where we give you as much information as we can about the Chaldean community here in East County and across San Diego.
Sarhad Jamo, the bishop who led the Chaldean Eparchy of St. Peter the Apostle for the Western United States from 2002 until his retirement in 2016, has died at the age of 83. Born in Iraq and later based at St. Peter's Chaldean Cathedral in El Cajon, Bishop Jamo was a noted scholar, author, and religious leader who guided the diocese through turbulent times, including wars ravaging his homeland and terrorists targeting Chaldean Christians in Iraq. The Chaldean diocese made the announcement on Instagram. Born to a Chaldean family in Baghdad in 1941, he went to Rome at age 17, where he obtained master's degrees in theology and philosophy, as well as a doctor of philosophy in Eastern ecclesiastical studies. He taught at the University of Notre Dame, the Pontifical Oriental Institute in Rome, and the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. He served at Chaldean churches in Iraq before moving to the United States in 1977, serving initially in Michigan. Then in 2002, Pope John Paul II created a second Chaldean diocese in the United States and appointed Sarhad Jamo to preside over the Eparchy of St. Peter the Apostle for the next 14 years. He led the diocese through challenging times. In 2010, he led a prayer vigil in El Cajon for Chaldeans massacred in a Baghdad church by terrorists. El Cajon was home to some 40,000 Iraqi Chaldeans at the time. Bishop Jamo traveled to Washington, D.C. in 2014 to meet with political leaders, including Congressman Juan Vargas, who introduced a bill to grant asylum for religious minorities persecuted by ISIS in Iraq to raise the cap on refugees from that region to come to the U.S. Mark Arabo, a Chaldean activist, remembered Bishop Jamo in a Facebook post. He praised Jamo as a revered and legendary figure in the Chaldean Catholic Church. The two men took numerous trips to the White House and the United Nations. Arabo recalls that together they effected significant change at the highest levels of government through our unwavering focus on the well-being of others. Bishop Jamo was also an author and historian who wrote numerous books and other publications on Chaldean Catholic history, language, and liturgy. After the Vatican approved a liturgical reform, the St. Peter Diocese became the first to implement the Reformed Mass. He voiced pride in his Chaldean heritage and once stated, "For 2,500 years, my Chaldean nation survived all massacres and genocides. Chaldeans will survive in the future." He added, "My Chaldean heritage is a diamond, and I claim it." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A controversial measure to allow El Cajon police officers to cooperate with federal immigration authorities is back on the agenda on Tuesday, February 11th. The newly revised version includes changes from an earlier draft that was voted down 3-2 after a five-hour hearing with emotional testimony on both sides just a week earlier. The immigration matter is scheduled at the end of a 3 p.m. meeting. However, there is an earlier 2 p.m. special meeting on unrelated issues. Activists on both sides have been advising the public to arrive early, since seats may fill up for the first meeting with people planning to stay for both. The original measure was introduced by Mayor Bill Wells and Councilman Phil Ortiz, who voted in favor. Council members Gary Kendrick, Michelle Meschel, and Steve Goble voted no after several attempts at compromise measures failed. The newest reversion includes amended language proposed by Councilmember Goble. A state law, SB 54, prohibits local police from turning over individuals to Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, unless they've been convicted of certain serious felonies such as murder or rape. California's law was upheld on appeal, and the Supreme Court declined to hear the case, allowing the law to stand. Yet, the Trump administration has threatened to prosecute local officials if they don't cooperate with federal immigration authorities, putting local cities in a difficult situation. Federal law prohibits state and local actors from resisting, obstructing, and otherwise failing to comply with lawful immigration-related commands or requests, states a Justice Department memo, raising the possibility of charges for harboring immigrants without legal status or for failing to share information with immigration authorities, NPR reports. The Justice Department is setting up a Sanctuary Cities Enforcement Working Group to identify state and local policies or laws that are inconsistent with the Trump administration's enforcement efforts and, where appropriate, to take legal action to challenge such laws. Whether courts would continue to uphold California's SB 54 or whether a conservative-leaning Supreme Court might someday overturn it is unknown. El Cajon's latest revision to its proposed measure now states the city's intent to comply with federal immigration law to the legal extent permissible for the sole purposes of removing violent criminals from our community. But the city's language does leave room to cooperate on deportation of people who are merely accused but not convicted of crimes. It notes that the Trump administration says there are over 647,000 non-detained individuals living in the United States illegally who have pending charges or have been convicted or charged with violent crimes, including robbery, assault, sexual assault, homicide, and human trafficking. That raises serious concerns about the prospect for innocent people to be deported without a trial. There are, after all, many examples of individuals falsely accused of crimes and later proven innocent, such as when DNA tests prove another person committed the crime, or when bystander videos emerge to disprove charges. A prime example of that occurred in La Mesa in 2020, when a police officer accused a young man at a trolley stop of assaulting the officer. A bystander's video proved the assault did not occur. The officer was fired for filing a false report, but his actions triggered a riot and accusations of racial profiling. East County Magazine spoke with Councilman Steve Goebel, the likely swing vote on El Cajon's immigration issue. He proposed another amendment included in the revised draft. Goebel says if you want police officers to work for ICE under SB 54, which is not allowed, and then the feds and the state are at such odds with each other, I want indemnification for our officers in case anybody comes after their credentials because they are licensed by the state. His amendment says the city will seek assistance from the United States Attorney General's office to indemnify the city and its employees for any assistance or cooperation with federal immigration authorities as permitted by law. The city also faces potential enforcement actions from the state, however, since Attorney General Rob Bonta has indicated he will hold cities accountable if they violate SB 54. The 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution states that any powers not given to the federal government are reserved for the states or the people. Goebel notes that California's SB 54 does not stop the federal authorities from doing their work, though the state doesn't want to assist in those efforts, he adds. SB 54 does allow cities to turn over undocumented immigrants to ICE if they've been convicted of serious felonies. Mayor Wells, who has announced his intent to seek re-election in 2026 and also run for supervisor in 2028, says his goal is to protect public safety. On X, he recently posted, "I'm bringing back a resolution to support our law enforcement officers working with ICE to remove illegal immigrant criminals from our communities. We all want safer neighborhoods, and I will continue fighting to protect our families from those who break our laws and threaten our safety. Law enforcement must have every tool available to uphold the law and keep criminals off our streets," the mayor says. Goebel states, what Bill, meaning Mayor Bill Wells, is saying aspirationally, is if we know there's a convicted criminal living in El Cajon illegally, we want the option of contacting ICE. That might include, for instance, a parolee who served time for a serious felony but was not handed over to ICE elsewhere. However, when asked by East County Magazine, Goebel indicates he does have concerns about deporting people who have merely been accused but not convicted of serious crimes, suggesting he might be open to an amendment limiting El Cajon Police Department's cooperation only to undocumented immigrants who have been convicted in court. Goebel spoke of a San Diego police officer's search for an accused serial rapist who turned out to be in a Border Patrol vehicle, so Border Patrol handed him over to police instead of deporting him immediately, and in Goebel's view, that was the right decision. He explains, the reason is that it's better to go through the justice system and be deported as a convicted criminal. And he noted that if merely deported without a criminal conviction, the suspect could potentially re-enter the U.S. again and again, without being held accountable. There is also the potential for the Trump administration to order deportation of any undocumented immigrant, even those living in the U.S. for decades without committing crimes here, since White House Secretary Karoline Leavitt says the Trump administration considers everyone who crossed the border illegally to be criminals. Trump, on the campaign trail, often spoke of wanting to deport all undocumented immigrants, an estimated 11 million people. Trump has also revoked special protection status for some legal immigrants, including Afghan translators who helped our military. So if a future court were to overturn SB 54, does El Cajon want its police officers cooperating if the crime was merely crossing the border or overstaying a legal protected status that was later revoked, as in the case of Afghans who helped our soldiers? The mayor's immigration measure has sparked heated public debate, with over 80 people speaking out at the last council meeting. Elected officials on both sides are facing serious threats, including death threats against a council member who voted against the resolution in El Cajon, and a recall effort gearing up against at least one council member who voted for the resolution, we've learned. Latinos en Acción has announced a press conference at noon Tuesday in front of the city council chambers in opposition to the resolution, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. A flyer announcing the event says California law already allows police to transfer violent criminals to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, and expanding local police cooperation would mostly affect nonviolent offenders and could lead to racial profiling. At an earlier hearing on this issue in El Cajon, Violet Lombera with Latinos in Acción testified that after moving to El Cajon from Brawley, she was stopped by police in what she views as racial profiling. "I don't want that to happen again. Doing this is really going to separate and divide us," she said. "It's going to attack my community, Mexican Americans," adding, "I've been attacked. I've been segregated. I've been racially profiled." "You guys need to reconsider this," she told the council, voicing fears of people being stopped and asked for proof of citizenship. "To do this is really going to hurt everybody in our community." While backers of the resolution have voiced concerns over the city being caught in the legal crosshairs between conflicting state and federal laws, El Cajon could also face lawsuits from immigrant rights groups over its immigrant policies. Salvador Sarmiento, with the National Day Labor Network, told the council on January 14th, "Our organization has litigated a bunch of these policies over the years," adding that he has repeatedly seen ICE detainers issued without probable cause. "If immigrants suffer actual damages due to actions of the city council or its officers," he warned, "we will sue." He added that in lawsuits filed by the organization elsewhere over immigration issues, ICE doesn't pay, the city pays, meaning taxpayers could ultimately pay the price. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A man shown in viral videos trashing a hair salon in Santee and violently threatening employees has been arrested. The incident occurred after the man was told he was late for his appointment at Great Clips on Mission Gorge Road. He began hurling shampoo bottles at workers and knocking products off shelves. He also shouted obscenities and repeatedly threatened to harm employees, including one worker, according to Sergeant Stephen Chambers with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. The incident was captured on cell phone videos, which were posted on multiple social media platforms. The man left the store before deputies arrived, but was identified by tips from the public. The man who came for a haircut at Great Clips wound up with his freedom clipped instead. 27-year-old August Marriott was arrested on February 4th in Chula Vista. He was booked at the San Diego Central Jail on numerous charges, including assault with a deadly weapon, vandalism, and violation of parole. Hillsdale Middle School on Brabham Street in Rancho San Diego was placed on lockdown briefly due to a call reporting a man with what appeared to be a gun in front of the school shortly before 3:30 p.m. on February 6th. Sheriff's deputies found a man fitting the description outside of campus and detained him for questioning. According to Sergeant Manuel Heredia, the 46-year-old La Mesa man was found in possession of a non-lethal handgun powered by carbon dioxide, or CO2. The man had not committed a crime, so he was not arrested. However, deputies learned from school staff and the Cajon Valley Union School District about previous negative encounters with the man. As a result, deputies obtained an emergency temporary protective order against the man, prohibiting him from coming near the school. As a precaution, sheriff's deputies announced extra patrols at the school the next day. The sheriff's department reminds everyone, if you see something, say something. You can report any criminal or suspicious activity by calling the San Diego County Sheriff's Office at 858-868-3200 or call 911 in an emergency. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. February brings some favorite festivities and fun-filled events, including a Judy Collins concert, a stage production of Romeo and Juliet, romantic Valentine's tease, a Black History celebration, the Boots and Bowties Awards dinner, Fido Fest, and Hawkwatch. Award-winning singer-songwriter Judy Collins will perform at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center in El Cajon on February 12th. Her rendition of Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now won entry into the Grammy Hall of Fame. And she won Song of the Year at the Grammys for her version of Send in the Clowns. She's also had many top 10 hits, gold and platinum selling albums. Recently, artists such as Dolly Parton, Joan Baez, and Leonard Cohen honored her legacy with the album Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins. For tickets to her concert, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will host Valentine's Teas February 13th through 17th. This special set menu is a romantically inspired four-course experience, starting with soup, then finger sandwiches and savories, followed by a scone, jam, and whipped cream, plus a luscious dessert tray. Vegetarian, gluten-free, and children's options are available with advance notice. For reservations and details, visit juliantea.com. Romeo and Juliet will take stage at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center February 21st through 23rd. The Shakespeare classic tells the tale of an age-old vendetta between two powerful families that erupts into bloodshed when a young, love-struck Romeo falls in love with Juliet. For tickets, visit eastcountyarts.org. A Black History Empowerment Celebration will be held on February 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Academy Middle School. Festivities will include spoken word, drumming, African dancers, music artists, soul food vendors, food trucks, and more. The City of Santee invites you to bring your dog for fun times at Fido Fest or adopt the furry companion from rescue groups. This event will take place on Saturday, February 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. Contests will be held for the biggest and smallest dogs, best costume, and best trick. There will also be ARFs and crafts, demonstrations, vendors, and giveaways. Dogs attending must be friendly with other dogs and people, comfortable in large groups, and up to date on vaccinations, and ready to have a good time exhibited by lots of tail wagging. For more information, you can visit cityofsanteeca.gov. The San Diego Regional East County Chamber of Commerce will celebrate its 113th annual East County Honors on Saturday, February 22nd at Squan Casino Resort at 5 p.m. This year's theme is Boots and Bow Ties. For over a century, the San Diego Regional East County Chamber of Commerce has held the tradition of swearing in the new Chamber Board of Directors and recognizing outstanding businesses, organizations, and community leaders in East County. For tickets to the event, you can visit business.eastcountychamber.org. You can view raptors and learn about birds of prey at Hawkwatch, hosted by the Wildlife Research Institute at the Beegent Ranch in Ramona, each Saturday in February starting at 10 a.m. If you can, bring binoculars, a folding chair, sturdy shoes, and a jacket. The event starts with an educational biologist talk, plus a question-and-answer session with falconry or ambassador raptors that you can see up close and personal. After that, you can opt to drive a 2-mile route on paved roads to observe wild raptors, including a bald eagle nest. Biologists and expert volunteers will help you spot and identify birds and view them through their high-powered professional telescopes. For more information, you can visit wildlife-research.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
Aiming to help patients be discharged with dignity, Sharp Grossmont Hospital held a clothing drive on February 1st. Linda Van Fulpen, manager of volunteer services at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, told East County Magazine that the drive helps patients who don't have their own clothing or shoes. Clothing items are given to people who are homeless or poor, patients being transferred to skilled nursing facilities, parents staying with their children in pediatrics, behavioral health patients attending court hearings, endoscopy patients requiring a change of clothes, and low-income women in prenatal care. Van Fulpen says, "We collected approximately 2,000 items during the hours of the drive. The hospital holds clothing drives once or twice a year," according to Van Fulpen. In 2024, nearly 8,500 articles of clothing and shoes were given to patients in need when leaving Sharp Grossman Hospital. This was thanks to the generous clothing donations from the people who gave through the Discharge with Dignity Drive. In 2019, California Senate Bill 1152 mandated that hospitals create plans for safely discharging homeless patients, including weather-appropriate clothing. Sharp Grossman Hospital has consistently exceeded these requirements and shown their commitment to compassionate care, according to a press release from the hospital. Items that can be donated include jackets, sweatshirts, shoes, socks, undergarments, sweatpants, and pants with an elastic waistband. Asked whether enough items were collected to meet the needs, Van Fulpen said that men's clothing, socks, and shoes that are flats or slip-ons are especially needed. If you miss the event, you can donate clothing and shoes for women and men year-round at the hospital's thrift store. That's the Thrift Corral, which is located at 8693 La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa. Items can be dropped off Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., with donations accepted at the loading dock behind the Thrift Corral shop. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Giovanni McNeely.
On February 1st, the spirit of community and compassion was on full display as Lemon Grove nonprofit organizations joined forces at Tragonza Park for a heartfelt fundraiser supporting fire relief efforts in Los Angeles. Over $2,100 were raised, according to a press release from organizers. With little time to plan, a coalition of local groups stepped up to make the event a success. Among those who contributed their time and efforts were the Lemon Grove Lions Club, Lemon Grove Forward Club, Lemon Grove Improvement Council, Revitalized Broadway, Lemon Grove Happenings, Lemon Grove Sir Optimist, Lemon Grove Historical Society, Lemon Grove's Fire Department, Lemon Grove Volunteers, and GC Lemon Grove. Adding to the day's uplifting atmosphere was the talented DJ Miggs, who generously donated his time to provide music and keep spirits high. This collaborative effort showcased the power of community action, proving that when neighbors come together, they can make a meaningful difference even on short notice. Lemon Grove's nonprofit organization's unwavering generosity and unity continue to shine as a beacon of hope for all of us, a release from the organizers concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. Next up, we have some important national news stories from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more state and local news from East County Magazine.
The Public News Service Monday afternoon update, I'm Mike Clifford. Vice President J.D. Vance has suggested the power of U.S. judges is beginning to reach its limit as the White House responds to a flurry of lawsuits that aim to stall its agenda. Judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power, he wrote on X. The BBC reports Vance's remarks Sunday came less than 24 hours after a judge blocked members of Trump's newly created advisory body, the Department of Government Efficiency, from accessing sensitive Treasury Department systems. Speaking to ABC on Sunday, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy suggested Trump's dramatic cost-cutting, including for its main overseas agency, USAID, amounted to the most serious constitutional crisis the country has faced, certainly since Watergate. And United Auto Workers are negotiating for their first union contract with Volkswagen at its Chattanooga plant, covering more than 4,000 UAW members. We get the details from our Daniel Smith.
The union says its key demands include higher wages, affordable health benefits, and retirement protections. Stephen Cochran co-chairs the bargaining committee for the UAW and Volkswagen. He says the workers should have the same pay structure as the other auto groups recognized and bargained by the United Auto Workers.
Right now, it's at the end of the Big Three's contract compared to what we have now, it's 24% higher. So we're asking for right at about 24% pay raise over the length of our contract just to get us equal with the Big Three.
Cochran notes that Volkswagen has offered a 16.5% raise over 4 years, leaving them several percentage points behind the current rates of the Big Three automakers.
Next, a new report highlights how regional commissions are helping improve infrastructure in rural America.
The report says in Georgia and surrounding states, the commission has been a vital resource since 1965, completing 91% of its goal to build highways through the Appalachian Mountains. Now, the commission says it's shifting its focus to modern priorities such as broadband. Federal co-chair Gail Manchin calls broadband the second highway, underscoring its role in expanding education, health care, and economic opportunities in rural communities.
When our children were sent home to go to school virtually, they had no internet in which to do that. Parents could not go home and work. There was no telehealth. That has become, obviously, the second highway system that we are building.
Shantia Hudson reporting.
And fisheries around the world catch millions of pounds of fish to feed other fish, but researchers in Maryland have found that possibly using leftover fish parts for the fishing industry could cut down on waste as well as competition for wild caught fish. Dr. Dave Love is with the Johns Hopkins University Center for a Livable Future.
When you make a fillet, about 50% of the fish goes to the human food supply, about 50% goes to other uses.
Fish meal and fish oil are typically made from catching fish such as anchovies, sardine, and menhaden, which are crucial to the Chesapeake Bay's ecosystem. This is Public News Service. Military borrowers pay higher costs and face greater financial risks than civilian borrowers when taking out credit to buy a car, according to a new report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
The report found service members tend to borrow larger sums at higher interest rates over longer terms. Rosemary Shahan with the Sacramento-based nonprofit Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says yo-yo scams are common, where the victim signs an initial contract on good terms, but then the dealer claims the financing fell through.
Then they say, if you don't agree to sign this other contract where we're charging you for a lot of worthless add-on and a higher interest rate, then we'll report the vehicle stolen and it'll ruin your career.
The report finds many service members are young and far from family members who might help them negotiate a large purchase. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And community action agencies in Massachusetts are asking state lawmakers to boost anti-poverty programs, that as federal aid remains in limbo.
Governor Maura Healey chose not to fund the agency's line item in her proposed budget, putting critical services for people coping with food and housing insecurity at risk. President of the Massachusetts Association for Community Action, Pam Keechler, says a loss of funding would impact food pantries that families rely on statewide.
Things have not gotten better for folks. And so we'll have to reduce the number of days. We'll probably have to reduce the amount of food that we're able to distribute.
Keechler says her agency's food pantry in New Bedford helped nearly 14,000 people last year alone. The agencies are requesting $7.5 million for the more than 600,000 people in Massachusetts they serve. I'm Catherine Carley.
Finally, groups working to protect Iowa's air and water quality rally at the state capitol this afternoon against a bill they say would protect pesticide companies from lawsuits if their products make people sick.
Iowa Senate Study Bill 1051, the so-called Cancer Gag Act, provides defense from civil liability tied to the use of pesticides as long as their labeling meets Environmental Protection Agency standards, which can be 15 years old. Iowa Food and Water Watch organizer McKaylin Mankel says the measure would essentially change the law to protect pesticide companies from accountability in a state that's already facing a public health crisis.
We have rising cancer rates. We're the only state in the nation where incidents of cancer are increasing, and we rank second in the nation for rates of cancer.
The International Agency for Research on Cancer has said that glyphosate is probably carcinogenic to humans, but the EPA says there's no evidence to support that. I'm Mark Moran.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our content and our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Wherever I go, God rules. When I walk on White House grounds, God walks on White House grounds.
Florida televangelist Paula White says to say no to President Donald Trump would be saying no to God. The head of the new White House faith office was once investigated by the Senate for using tax-exempt donations to pay for her luxury lifestyle. White preaches that God rewards gifts to her church with riches, drawing criticism even from evangelicals. She'll now work with the Justice Department task force to root out what Trump calls anti-Christian bias in government. Federal Elections Commission Chairwoman Ellen Weintraub says Trump is attempting to illegally fire her from the bipartisan agency enforcing campaign finance laws. Weintraub says neutering the FEC would prevent the public from knowing who's funding political candidates.
There is already too much dark money in our system, and without an FEC, there would be even more. Basically, all of it would be dark, and there would be no one out there to enforce the law.
An FEC commissioner can only be removed after a president nominates a successor for Senate confirmation, but Weintraub has been blocked from her office and computers. Trump has fired the head of the National Archives. The independent agency angered Trump and his allies when it sought to get back classified documents he'd taken to Mar-a-Lago. House Republicans have reintroduced the SAVE Act, which would require Americans to prove their citizenship to register to vote. But opponents say many people don't have easy access to birth certificates or passports, including rural residents and those who lost documents in natural disasters. Bianca Rosales with the Students Learn, Students Vote Coalition says studies show strict voter ID laws disproportionately impact 18 and 19-year-olds.
Even though the 26th Amendment to the Constitution says that age should not be a barrier to voting, these voter ID laws are hitting the youngest voters the hardest.
Voting by non-citizens is already illegal and rarely ever happens. In the last election, voters in 8 states approved state constitutional amendments to bar non-citizens from voting. A North Carolina trial judge has dismissed a lawsuit by a Republican state Supreme Court candidate aiming to overturn his election loss by throwing out 60,000 ballots. A lower court and the State Board of Elections have already turned him down, noting the ballots were cast legally and were only challenged after the fact. 3 recounts show the Democratic candidate narrowly won the race. Maxwell Bass is with the North Carolina Black Alliance.
This is not about individuals fraudulently voting. This is about an individual trying to undermine the electoral process of democracy in North Carolina.
That remains the only uncertified statewide race from 2024. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Trump administration has begun drafting an executive order that would begin the process of eliminating the Department of Education, CNN reports. This order would instruct the Secretary of Education to create a plan to diminish the department through executive action. And since congressional approval is required to eliminate any agency created by Congress, Trump also plans to push Congress to pass legislation that would abolish the department entirely. In an Oval Office press briefing, Trump stated, "I believe strongly in school choice, but in addition to that, I want the states to run schools." He adds that he wants his Secretary of Education nominee, Linda McMahon, to put herself out of a job. The prospect of dismantling the Department of Education has led to questions and fears over potential chaos, over how key responsibilities and billions in federal funding would be affected, including handling federal financial aid, grants for disadvantaged students, and civil rights enforcement. Now, first off, many Department of Education programs carry out mandates explicitly created by Congress, so they can't just be abolished by executive fiat. And second, some of these functions and the existence of a federal department focused on education are very popular even among Republicans. The Department of Education also has authority over financial lifelines that many campuses and students rely on. The department's K-12 programs serve more than 50 million students attending 130,000 public and private schools nationwide. In addition, federal grants, student loans, and work-study assistance benefits more than 13 million post-secondary students. California has a massive stake in how the department is run. Our state receives more than $2 billion in Title I grants to counteract the effects of poverty, more than any other state, according to the California Department of Education. Over 200,000 low-income students in the California State University system, the largest and most diverse four-year higher education system in the nation, annually rely on $1 billion in federal grants to afford college. And at the University of California, more than 80,000 undergraduate students received about $454 million in Pell Grants in the 2023 and 2024 academic year alone. Top educators are speaking out on the potentially negative impacts of Trump's actions, while some conservative leaders voice support. Becky Pringle, president of the National Education Association, calls Trump's effort to eliminate the Department of Education a power grab that would steal resources for our most vulnerable students. She predicts this would explode class sizes, cut job training programs, and make higher education too expensive for middle-class families. It would also take away funds for special education services for disabled students and gut student civil rights protections. Tony Thurmond, California's state superintendent of public instruction, posted on social media, "While the Trump Education Department no longer protects students from discrimination, California law is unchanged. My office remains committed to defending the rights of all California students," he said. Liz Sanders, a California Department of Education spokesperson, says, "We are incredibly concerned about what seems to be a thoughtless approach to changing essential federal programs that support our kids every day and support our most vulnerable kids every day." She adds, "We want to make sure that these services are able to have a level of continuity for our educators and our families and our students." Mike Petrelli, president of the right-leaning Thomas B. Fordham Institute think tank, says Republicans do not have the votes in Congress to dismantle the Department of Education. Plus, he observes, it would be an unpopular move in many Republican districts. But Rick Hess, a senior fellow and director of education policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute, says it is perfectly reasonable to abolish the department or at least downsize it because of what he calls wasteful spending, political biases toward teachers' unions, and misplaced responsibilities. Hess and Petrilli have both questioned why educational bureaucrats should manage a $1 trillion student loan portfolio rather than financial experts in the Treasury Department, a shift advocated by Project 2025, the conservative policy playbook written in part by many members of the Trump administration. Trump laments U.S. educational performance and cost, stating, "We spend more per pupil than any other country in the world, and we're ranked at the bottom of the list." Fact check. As of 2023, the annual Best Countries report actually ranks the United States at the top worldwide based on a global survey on education. Ironically, however, despite the U.S. having the best surveyed education system on the globe, U.S. students have actually scored lower in math and science than students from some other countries in recent years. A Business Insider report in 2018 ranked the U.S. 24th in science and 38th in math scores out of 195 recognized countries. So can Trump's plans actually succeed? While calls to abolish the Department of Education are not new, the move has historically failed to get support from Congress. In 2023, 60 Republicans joined 205 Democrats in voting down an effort to end the Department of Education's authority to administer K-12 programs, for instance. But Trump has already launched cuts via executive action. Dozens of employees at the Education Department associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion programs have been placed on paid administrative leave, for example. Trump says, "We will drain the government education swamp and stop the abuse of your taxpayer dollars to indoctrinate America's youth with all sorts of things that you don't want to have our youth hearing." He has also targeted programs such as critical race theory. Public opinion may play a key role in the outcome of all of this. A recent Wall Street Journal poll shows 61% of Americans oppose plans to eliminate the Department of Education. And a bipartisan November 2024 survey shows rank-and-file Republicans opposing this idea by a 2-to-1 margin. Even if Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and Christian nationalists want to kill the Department of Education, many Democrats, Republican members of Congress from swing districts, and Americans in general may feel otherwise. Trump's effort to eliminate the Department of Education will prove to be a key test for Republicans in Congress to determine whether they will choose loyalty to Trump when their constituents learn of the effort, even if most are opposed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Military borrowers pay higher costs and face greater financial risks than civilian borrowers when taking out credit to buy a car, according to a new report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The report found service members tend to borrow larger sums at higher interest rates over longer terms. Rosemary Shahan with the Sacramento-based nonprofit Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says yo-yo scams are common, where the victim signs an initial contract on good terms, but then the dealer claims the financing fell through.
Then they say, if you don't agree to sign this other contract where we're charging you for a lot of worthless add-ons and a higher interest rate, then we'll report the vehicle stolen and it'll ruin your career.
The report finds many service members are young and far from family members who might help them negotiate a large purchase. Last year, under former President Joe Biden, the Federal Trade Commission finalized the CARS rule, which would combat dishonest sales tactics. Automakers sued, and last month, a federal judge put it on hold. Shahan says the CARS rule would require dealers to tell you the price up front before you even go to the lot.
Prohibits car dealers from representing that they're somehow affiliated with the military when that's not true, and would also require them to be more honest about the price of the add-ons and actually get your affirmative approval.
The FTC under the Trump administration will now have to decide whether to stand behind the rule and fight for it in court or withdraw it. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The proposed supervised placement of sexually violent predator Gary Snavely at a home on Winola Road in Julian has been canceled, CBS reports, after the homeowner withdrew the property from consideration. The homeowner, who asked to remain anonymous, told CBS 8 that she never gave approval to Liberty Healthcare after the company told her they were seeking placement for either witness protection or a violent criminal. The owner also stated that Liberty offered substantially more than market rent, but, she said, I was most likely not going to go through with it. She indicated that she never gave final approval and was surprised to learn that a court had approved the placement without her permission. And she added, I don't want to put the community at risk, so I apologize. It's been canceled. The CBS story indicates the media outlet reached out to Liberty Healthcare for comment, but the company did not reply. Snavely was convicted of molesting two girls ages 8 and 9 in Orange County back in 1987. In 1996, he was convicted of failing to register as a sex offender in San Diego County and went back to prison. After his release, he was placed in Hacumba in 2008, but after he abused his psychotropic medication and lied to his supervising staff, he went back to Coalinga State Hospital, though he was not accused of committing new crimes. Violations included failing to remain appropriately clothed at all times on his property while in public view and failing to report any and all instances of sexual thoughts and fantasies, including sexual deviance, to treatment staff. A March 7th hearing on Snavely's proposed placement in Julian was scheduled, but it will likely be postponed. Liberty Healthcare must now find an alternative location for Snavely's placement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers.
And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now, that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies. It also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting-looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off, and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
California's 5.8 million public school kids have made small gains in fourth grade math and reading since 2022. But they're still behind pre-pandemic levels, according to new data from the 2024 Nation's Report Card. Since 2019, California grade 4 math scores are down 2 points and reading scores are down 4 points. Peggy Carr is with the National Center for Education Statistics. She says the good news is chronic absenteeism rates, which doubled during the pandemic, are dropping.
So some improvement, but not enough. And this wouldn't be so worrisome if we had not found a consistent and strong correlation between absenteeism and student performance. You have to come to school to learn.
Schools in Los Angeles are a bright spot, with fourth grade math scores up 2% from 2019 levels. However, San Diego schools saw a 2% drop. California students score slightly below the national average in fourth and eighth grade math and reading. Martin West is vice chair of the National Assessment Governing Board. He notes fewer kids are reading for fun and thinks the rise of screen-based childhood has big implications for education.
I could actually imagine it being something that creates both declines at the bottom and at the same time accelerates students at the top, because screens can be a remarkable source of enrichment if you know how to use them right.
The report card shows there are still huge racial gaps. For example, in fourth grade math, Hispanic children make up 75% of kids who score below the 25th percentile. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego Metropolitan Transit System, or MTS, is increasing trolley service for the green, blue, and orange lines, offering additional late-night and weekend service to provide riders with more options to take public transit. The Green Line trolley will offer service every 15 minutes all day long, every day, between downtown San Diego and El Cajon until 11 p.m., with service to San Diego's popular entertainment destinations, such as Petco Park, Snapdragon Stadium, downtown San Diego, and shopping centers. The added weekend and late-night service will provide riders more flexibility when taking transit to special events. The UC San Diego Blue Line trolley has added after-dark options with 15-minute service after 9:30 p.m. every day between American Plaza and UTC. Riders can take the UC San Diego Blue Line to UTC, UCSD Central Campus, Old Town, and Downtown San Diego, among others, making travel for work, school, and leisure more convenient. The Orange Line trolley has added frequency on weekend mornings. It now runs every 15 minutes through 7 p.m., offering trips between El Cajon and downtown San Diego, starting just before 5 a.m. at 4:48 a.m. The Orange Line provides service to the San Diego Superior Court, Civic Center, Lemon Grove, La Mesa, Grossmont Center, and more. Sharon Cooney, MTS Chief Executive Officer, says our goal is always to make transit more accessible and reliable and to continue to provide a better overall experience for our riders. We're excited to see more people ride transit to special events, work, and leisure activities alike, she says. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.